The job of the blender is to combine these elements in such a way as to produce an overall flavour.
A wider repertoire of different beverages than ever before.
I think one of the most interesting breweries, and certainly one of the most interesting origin stories for a brewery in Australia.
Single malts, blends, grain whiskies, bourbons and more.
If you want mezcal to be sold around the world, then unfortunately you're going to have to make a compromise.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson. And this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. Launched in 2008 by American brewer, author and beer educator Ray Daniels, the Cicerone Certification Program is like the beer equivalent of the Court of Master Sommeliers. In early 2022, Shane McNamara became the first Australian to reach the pinnacle of the program. Master Cicerone, joining a group of only 19 other individuals worldwide who have this title. The Master Cicerone exam challenges individuals to master every technical and aesthetic aspect of beer. It requires an exceptional understanding of brewing, beer, and food pairing, combining outstanding tasting abilities with an encyclopedic knowledge of commercial beers. If Shane's name is new to you, it was to me too. He's based over in London, where he currently works for the world's biggest brewer, AB InBev, in a global role overseeing the innovation, development and quality of some beer brands you might have heard of, like Stella Artois, Budweiser and Corona. When I spoke to Shane, he'd just gotten back from the Czech Republic, which you'd know is the home of Pilsner beer, as explored with writer Tom Acatelli back in Season 8 of the podcast. So I took the opportunity to ask Shane about the Czech beer scene today. And later on, whether he plans on returning to Australia with his new qualifications, which he says are the payoff for thousands of hours spent studying and tasting beer.
There's four levels for those that don't know in the Cicerone. There's Certified Beer Server, Certified Cicerone, Advanced Cicerone and Master Cicerone. And each step along the way, you probably felt it yourself, James, is quite a step up in terms of knowledge required, the difficulty of the exam and kind of the learning journey that you go on to pass that next level. And once you start getting up towards the advanced and master level, the breadth and depth of knowledge that you need to capture and embed in your memory is a lot more. For example, you might get a question on a Saison, right? And at Certified Cicerone level for a Saison, you might get some questions on some of the ingredients that you would expect in a Saison and also particular flavor characteristics for the style and also some commercial examples. When it comes to the master level, you're expected to know not only basic ingredients but varied ingredients that could be in a Saison, particular brewing methods you might use, a classic recipe that you might involve, so the actual ingredients used in the process, a little bit more on history on the area of where it's produced in Belgian Wallonia region, and then five different commercial examples from three countries. So your breadth and depth of that Saison, while it might be in the same question in the certified level as the master one, your required knowledge is a lot deeper there.
The other people that have managed to gain Master Cicerone, are they mostly all brewers like yourself?
There's a range at the moment. I think a couple of the are brewers and quite a few are industry consultants as well. But don't get me wrong, having a brewing background certainly helped myself in this exam, because one portion of the exam, of course, is brewing processes. It's not a brewing exam, but having that fundamental understanding of ingredients, what they mean to the process, the brewing process, and the flavor compounds that can arise during all those steps and from the ingredients certainly gave me a leg up in a lot of portions of the exam, where I could then focus on, let's say, beer styles, beer and food pairings and the draft dispense system. So it took a little bit of weight off my shoulders having that background and knowledge there.
What did you find to be the most challenging parts of the syllabus?
There's probably two areas. One is the red one and one is the learnt part. And by that I mean beer styles are incredibly difficult for me to remember, I'll be honest, because you have a lot of specifications you have to remember. So you need to know the average alcohol range for over 100 different beers, and not only the alcohol range, but the average bitterness range, the average color. And so, for example, that could be a best bitter with an alcohol range of 3.5 to 4% with an IBU range of X and a SRM, which is the color, from 5 to 15 or something like that. So remembering those different specs, along with the apparent attenuation across 100 different styles, was incredibly hard to constantly remember. And the only way I could do it, to be honest, is create cards and talk about it every day with friends and family to annoy them, to embed it to memory. And the second part in terms of ready is the tasting portion of it. And this is probably the one that most people find difficult when it comes to the exam. So you have a various amount of a varying range of different compounds you have to remember when it comes to beer. And by and large, there's probably about 30 that are incredibly important. And these range from the different ingredients and the processes that will come up in the brewing. And so you could have fermentation characteristics. This could be isomalt acetate, which is bubble gum. This could be ethyl acetate, which is kind of like nail polish, again, arising from the fermentation process. There could be malt flavor compounds, such as isobutyraldehyde, which is grassy, or 2-acetylpyridine, which is malty. Then you have hop flavor compounds like linalool and geraniol.
And these are all faults, essentially. That it depends what beer style, I suppose, whether they're faults or not.
100% correct. And this is a real learning curve, I think, for a lot of people, but even when you're going on the Cicerone journey, but the wider beer journey, what's a fault? What's the definition of a fault? And by and large, you end up coming to the quite right conclusion that it is something that's unintended. And I think we mentioned earlier offline in that I went to the Czech Republic last weekend, and this is a country with a classic beer example of, is it a feature or fault? When you think of Czech Pilsners, they are full of diacetyl. For most other beer styles, it is a complete off flavor, and you don't want movie popcorn kind of butterscotch flavor in your nice clean lager. But in the Czech Republic, they certainly do. And so while it's an off flavor in an American light lager, when you have a Czech Pilsner, absolutely appropriate and fit to style. And so when you think of style, think of these flavors, there are a couple that are notoriously not desirable. And that could be something like isovaleric acid, which is like sweaty socks and Parmesan cheese kind of style. And I don't know too many people who like that flavor. And I don't know, and I can't honestly think of a beer style where it's incredibly appropriate. But most of them, I come a bit more of an ethereal approach in that, does the brewer intend it or not, rather than being strict in off flavors. And the nomenclature around us actually changed. We try not to use off flavors so much as flavor standards, just to open it up, because otherwise people and the other classic example I find in the industry you use is when people talk about POF plus yeast. And this is phenolic off-flavor positive yeast. And this could be generally your Weizen yeast. So if you're making a Hefeweizen, you want some nice flavors of bananas and cloves. Bananas being isomalt acetate, as I mentioned before, kind of bubblegum. Cloves coming from the phenolic flavors that are produced from the yeast there as well. And so why call it POF? Why is it phenolic off-flavor? It's a intended flavor for those beers. So changing the words and the language we use creates a little bit more, it's while incredibly nuanced, it creates a little bit more of a wider open and appreciation for the beer styles that are out there. Because a lot of the literature that was created, let's say over the last 40 years from 1970s up until probably around the mid 2010, was really driven by larger brewers and by industry, and that's focused around lager. So I'm sure why a lot of lager brewers thought of those yeasts as a phenolic off flavor, which was undesirable when it came to the yeast there. And so now that the research is a little bit more broad, there's more understanding that are a wider variety of styles, and the research behind that is taking a little bit more of an open approach to it.
What about beer and food matching? Is that something that you had to really work at as well?
Yes, this is as much as I kind of joke is like on the beer portion, you need to drink as much beer as possible, which is kind of true. You need to, you can't talk about a beer if you haven't tried it, right? And the same comes to mind when you have food, right? So I had to expand my knowledge and appreciation of a wide variety of cuisines. So for example, you know, English people love, you know, fish and chips and putting some vinegar on it. That's one part of the combination when it comes to food, but also you need to branch out into other cultures in terms of, let's try some bunseo from Vietnam, let's try some ramen from Japan, let's see what is going on in other parts of the world.
That doesn't sound like too much of a chore. I'm already doing that. I'm already well on my way.
exactly. And, you know, you don't have to be a full-on foodie, but funnily enough, by the time you go through that process of enjoying and understanding different cuisines, I think you end up becoming one. You're interested in beer, but once you start tasting other foods, you end up really getting interested in that other side of the business, which beer fits with incredibly well. You know, beer and food pairings in restaurants now is a real market for a large part of the industry, whereas previously it wasn't. It was the beholding of wine, really. And so it's nice to see beer come out there. And you think of the range of flavors you can get from beer compared to wine, that the range of beer and food combinations you can get are eminently more expandable than you can have with wine.
You mentioned that you've just come back from Prague. I'm really interested to know what the beer scene's like over there. Is there a really vibrant craft beer scene in addition to the sort of the classic breweries and classic styles that people would be familiar with?
Prague is a really interesting one, and Czech Republic as a whole. And this is where I find I'm incredibly spoilt to be over in Europe at the moment, because when most people think of beer, when I think of beer, I think of the UK scene, right? And when I think of the craft beer scene in the UK, you think of lots of neat beers, lots of hoppy beers, on top of a tradition of drinking cask beer. And so that's the interrelationship you might have in the UK. You have other very strong traditional beer nations in Europe, being Germany, Belgium, and Czech Republic being one as well. And so what I love is going over to a country like the Czech Republic and Prague in particular, where you have a very strong beer culture and a particular styles of beer, and that's embedded. And so how does the craft beer scene sit in a country with a drinking culture like that? And Germany can be similar as well. You have very strong regional styles, very strong tradition of good quality beer. Does it need a NEPA sitting next to it at the bar? And that's a really interesting dichotomy I like seeing in these kinds of countries. And so I was over at the Czech Republic for 5 days last weekend, and primarily in Prague. And I noticed the following is, by and large, most of the bars selling there are selling their traditional beers. And that would be a pale lager, amber lager, and Czech dark lager. And that's generally how you would purchase it and do your list. What was interesting is craft beer in Prague was everywhere, but they weren't mixed at the same bar. So you would have a bar that would generally have your traditional lagers and an OG lineup, but around the corner would be a craft beer bar with all the range that would be in there as well. What you would see in the UK generally is you would go to a pub and you would have your range of traditional beers, which could be, let's say, Bass, Carling in the UK, but that will be next to a Beaver Town and a Camden Town, and it could be next to a more local one like Five Points. And so you've got the full range. That's on the keg line, and then the cask line, you could have a beer like Carvey's and things like that. So you'll have in the one pub a wide range from traditional beers, whether it be on keg and cask, to new craft breweries. In the Czech Republic and Prague in particular, I didn't really see that. So I thought that was interesting. So if I want to get a craft beer, I would go to a craft pub. And at those craft pubs, I thought the range of beers was really interesting and exciting as well, because their tap lists aren't yet dominated by hazy boys on there. So all the juicy hazy beers have not taken over the tap list there. So there's quite a wide variety of styles on there, and some I hadn't even had before. There was one brewery that made a grape ale, which is interesting. Italian grape ale. This is an up-and-coming style that's now recognized in the BJCP there, and also a Philadelphia sour, which I hadn't had before. And I was like, what on earth is Philadelphia sour? And so I did a little bit of reading on it. I know, Dim, whether you're aware, it was it's a particular yeast strain that Lallemand sell and produce, and it simultaneously produces ethanol and lactic acid. So in one neat little fermentation, you can get a nice light tart sour beer, which I thought was kind of nice. Yes, there were some amazing IPAs, and there was a black NEPA I tried. So they're going quite experimental, but the range of craft beer that were made by Czech brewers and available in the Czech bars was quite wide. If I compare that to going to a craft pub, in particular in London, or even a craft brewery, without a doubt, 6 of the 10 lines are hop-forward juicy hazy IPAs, which is fine because I love those beers, but I love diversity and range in beer styles as well.
But were those craft beers in Czech Republic, were they locally brewed or imports?
Locally brewed. So, and actually that's another note. I did find a lot of the bars that I went to that were craft focused would just Czech brewers, which is really interesting. If you go to a fair amount of the bars in the UK that are craft focused, I guess because craft is widely available at a lot of other bars, they might get more imports. They'll get more beers from other parts of the world as well. Although I do notice that within the UK, there is definitely now a focus on UK craft brewers as well, whereas you might be getting a lot of imports from other parts of the world. The quality and range of beers you can get in the UK satisfies the market there.
So, Shane, are you thinking that you're going to stay over in London for the foreseeable, or do you have designs to return to Australia, where obviously you'd be the only master cicerone that we have in the country?
I know. That's a smart business move, James. Yeah. I should have a captured market.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the thing is, it's bloody hard for anyone else to get it here because, you know, you've got to get to Chicago, and you know, that's quite an undertaking in itself, isn't it?
That's absolutely right. You fly up to Chicago. They only host it at the Cicerone Organization offices there, and it's a 2-day exam that's held over there. So it's not only a journey for the 2 days that you're there, but it's a journey just to get there. To be honest, to fly up to Chicago. Who knows what the future holds yet? We'll see.
Did you have to sit that exam more than once?
I did. It took me a couple of goes to get it. There's very few people. I think there's 2 people that are currently master cicerones that took it and passed it on their first go. It's a real reality check, to be honest, for a lot of people in the industry, because if you think of the kind of people that are passing it and some of the backgrounds, and even myself, I'd spent, you know, the last 8 years in the brewing industry, last 8 years studying and traveling about beer. I have a master's in brewing science, and it still took me a couple of goes just to pass this damn exam. So it's incredibly difficult. And I think that's all credit to the organization to create a clear syllabus and a pathway to an exam that is incredibly hard to pass, but well recognized and well earned when you do manage to climb the mountain.
And what about the advanced exam? Did that take more than one attempt as well?
No, that was a one-go shot for me, which was very nice for that one. Yes, I passed that in 2018. I believe. And so, but again, that was the advance is quite a step up from the certified level as well. The depth of knowledge and the requirements that you have for that exam go a little bit more, because once you're at the certified level, it is paper-based exam with written questions and a tasting portion. Once you go to the advanced and the master's level, you start having interviews. And so it gets a little bit more practical. It's not only can you talk the talk, but can you walk the walk? And so you'll have, let's say, Ray Daniels sit down in front of you, and we'll put a beer in front of you and say, talk to me about Brettanomyces in beer.
And he's not an intimidating guy at all, is he?
Not at all. At least the most stone cold faced interviewer I've ever seen.
Yeah.
won't raise an eyebrow, will gently nod as you're talking. And so it can be incredibly off putting because you're going on this ramble and you don't know if you're going in the right direction. They will kindly steer you back on if if you're going off on the wrong tangent. But it certainly feels like you're talking to a wall when talking to Ray in that exam.
And from the actual exam itself, were there any other aspects of it that were particularly tough in terms of just kind of mental composure? Is a big thing with an exam like that, isn't it?
Preparation is 100% key for it, and you need to go with a strategy into the exam, right? So you have 2 days of examinations, and they're the same each day. In the morning, you will go down and do 3 hours with 8 essays. So time management for that is incredibly important, and thinking about where you're going to focus your energy on in terms of how to answer the questions and how you're going to deconstruct that is important, because time management only gives you a certain amount of time per question, let's say 20 to 30 minutes. And so managing that is incredibly important, because straight after that, you have two taste panels. So you go from writing about beer, and then you're going to have, it could be a stop-go test, which is you'll get, let's say, a range of 9 beers. Some of those beers will be spiked with a flavor. And so you have to decide whether there is a flavor in the beer, and if there is, what flavor is it? So that can be incredibly intimidating on your senses and your gumption to call out, no, I need to stop it because I think I'm getting this. Or the worst is you keep smelling the beer and you keep looking for something and you might find something, but actually there's nothing there. So you're overthinking it. So you'll have two panels and then you'll have the most nervous lunch of your life. there. And then the afternoon, it is full of oral examinations. And these will range from talking about beer in there, and you might have an example beer in front of you, and you'll go through that style, and do you think the style is the classic one that you're about to taste? Others could be beer and food pairings that you'll go through. You'll have a draft dispense one, which is incredibly difficult. You might have a setup that you have to put together, or it might be an issue with the draft dispense that you need to fix, and you've got 10 minutes to fix it. You'll go into the room, nil witty, we'll say, Shane, I've got a problem. My beer is not pouring. Can you fix it for me? And so this is where the exam really transformed from just, knowledge-based to now you have to really walk the walk and actually do what you're talking about. You can talk about all the draft dispense equipment you want, but if you can't change and fix a keg issue, you're not really worth your salt.
Awesome, Shane. Well, thanks so much for joining us for a chat, and congratulations again.
Thank you very much, James. Hopefully catch up for a beer next time I'm out there.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson, like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.